They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining us today, we have Mike Gingrich. And Mike is a psychologist who sent me an article that's on my from the HOAtrenches.com website. And the title was really intriguing. It's HOAs Coming Undone. What's Hiding in Plain Sight? And it's a social psychology perspective. Mike, thank you so very much for joining me and for writing this and for sending this, and most of all for agreeing to be on the show with us, for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much, Sue. I'm very pleased to be here.
I'm excited to have different perspectives because I've been doing this for 30 years. And 30 years ago, I realized that This isn't going to work. I don't care what you do with it. It's just not going to work. It goes against the grain of everything. And unfortunately, finding people who agree with me has been a little difficult. So I'm thrilled to have you. So what's your perspective on this? You've been studying this for a while.
Well, I've been studying it not nearly as long as you have, only 7 years. However, when I get into studying something, I guess from my mental health perspective, I really get into it. And I've been in the mental health field. I'm retired now, but I was in the mental health field for over 40 years. And I worked in just about every aspect of the mental health field one can imagine. And I was very, very fortunate when my wife and I came to live in this HOA in Northern California, a very large HOA. I managed to make contact with a gentleman who had been on the board of directors, and he had saved volumes, and I mean volumes of paperwork, financials, memos, association magazines from this HOA starting from about 1998 or 1999. Now, apparently, this HOA had existed since 1970, roughly. So he didn't have paperwork that went back that far, but he did have all these documents from about 1999 forward, and I read a lot of those things, and it was very, very educational for me to see the patterns that I noticed began developing, patterns of management, patterns within the membership, patterns in the relationship between management and members, between the board and members, and there were some very, very definite patterns that started to shape up, and I'm assuming you want me to talk about some of those.
Absolutely, because I'm taking notes while you're talking here, so I've got things to add to that. So go on.
Okay. Well, one of the things I noticed very clearly was that HOAs really do not seem to serve the members, the homeowners. They really seem to be a mechanism that serves developers, real estate industry, even legislators, definitely the HOA industry, and then something that I've chosen to call collective narcissism, which is certain small groups of homeowners who seem to come together around, basically around some of the old things of power, like power politics. And they seem to be groups that want to control the governance process within the HOA. Now, part of my the title talks about hiding in plain sight. I use that because, for me, many of these patterns are easy to see. I see them very, very quickly. aside from those documents that one ex-board member so nicely gave me, I, of course, attended quite a few board meetings in the HOA that I live in. I also attended quite a few committee meetings, quite a few groups of members who had gotten together for various reasons, just getting together for pleasure, getting together to discuss some of the issues within the HOA. So I gathered information from there also. So you might say I got a lot of historical paper information, but I also got a lot of information directly from people. I also spoke with, you know, various directors, current ones, past ones, etc. Anyway, getting back to my hiding in plain sight, some of these patterns are really not so obvious to the casual observer, or let's say to the untrained observer. Having been trained actually as an observer, how to observe people as individuals, people in groups, and even in organizations, and I have training in all those areas. Excuse me. I began to see these various patterns. One of them is that HOAs, of course, are a form of government, and I think they're intended to be a form of government, but it turns out they're a form of government that really has a severe imbalance of power. And the imbalance basically has to do with the board of directors having lots and lots of power and the members having, I would say, relatively little power, or their power is really kind of watered down. Members are kind of left on their own to figure out what the CC&Rs are all about and what they really mean, because most CC&Rs are... they must be written by attorneys, because I even, of course, they are. Yeah, with all my education, I even have trouble figuring out what some of them really mean and what they're getting at.
Mike, don't feel bad, because even the attorneys don't understand them, and they're written that way on purpose because they create conflict, which builds all this business for the attorneys who write them. They're all industry attorneys. It's on purpose.
And that keeps them employed.
Absolutely. They said they write themselves a recession-proof career. Those are their words.
I believe that's true. I really believe that. And some of the things I'm going to say in the next few minutes kind of go hand in hand with that. Looking at the HOA laws and how they operate on here in California on the state level, I've had a lot of experience with that also that I didn't include in this little article I sent you. I've made contacts by letter, by some by phone, some online, with just about every state agency here in California you can imagine that either has something to do with HOAs or that I naively assumed might have something to do with HOAs. And what I found was that, for example, the state, California State Attorney General, is the state agency that is mandated to oversee and regulate HOAs in California. However, their regulation is, I'd say that's very loosely, is I would apply that term, regulate. If a member from an HOA sends a complaint into the state attorney general, you get a nice little form letter back saying, you know, basically thank you for your concern, but you've got to be a lot more specific. And then if you try to be more specific, then they will say to you, well, we want to send this concern you have on to your HOA. Mm-hmm. And in many instances, that's something that the homeowner really, the main reason they've contacted the state attorney general is because they've already tried to deal with their HOA and got nowhere. Anyway, long story short, state attorney general really doesn't do much of anything to enforce HOA laws or to regulate them. They really do not give the homeowner any support. Neither does the real estate. Here in California, I think they call it the Bureau of Real Estate. Now, my understanding is they are at least supposed to regulate how HOAs market themselves to consumers. And in my contacts with them, they really don't seem very interested in issues like HOAs misrepresenting themselves to the public.
Mike, the whole HOA thing was built on a lie. One of the biggest beneficiaries of HOAs are local municipal governments, and that was a group that you did not include when you were talking about all the people who benefit from these things. They're the biggest, and that's why they mandate them. The whole idea is to put you under a private government because you agreed to that, and they just want to collect taxes, and nobody wants to do anything. It's counterintuitive that the government's going to come and find that these things are a disaster because they can't continue to mandate them and to approve them.
Exactly. And it's like the governments, local, county, state, it's almost as if it's one more community, HOAs are one more community that they've washed their hands of, that they don't have to deal with now because it's under its own separate little government. And the reality is, as I'm saying, HOAs, us HOA owners are out here in no man's land, floating around, flailing around, trying to figure out how this whole thing operates and trying to figure out how do we get our voices heard, and it's extremely difficult, very, very difficult.
That's why I started the From the HOA Trenches website, because nobody can tell your story like you can. And if you go to the press, and the press may or may not take it, it depends on how much pressure they're on from the industry not to publish these things, they're going to not get the story straight. I'm going to put it kindly, but they're not, you know, they don't understand the issues, and they're not going to get the story straight. I think it's so important for people to tell their stories in their own words, and that's why I host this show. That's why I host the website. Get your story out there, because there needs to be a track record of what's going on.
Absolutely. I think you're right that only the homeowners in HOAs can really tell the story. And I wanted to add that many of the things, when you were talking about the media and the press and getting the story straight, the vast majority of the stories that one sees in the media, and I've made, oh, I don't know how many attempts. I have a couple of pages full of a list of media sources that I've contacted trying to get them to write an article or do a story. At any rate, the vast majority of the stories that one sees in the media have to do with crazy stories about the CCNR. Stories about pink houses and and about flags and putting up political signs.
Right.
Or they have to do with construction defects. Well, yes, those things are problems. They do happen. But in my experience, that's only one, I think, relatively small part of the problem, and kind of like just a tip of the iceberg.
It's a symptom. They're symptomatic.
In my article is that I think HOAs, the way they are set up, the way the laws are designed, the way that the most of them are run, they are a setup. You referred to it a few minutes ago. They are a setup for problems, for very serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
There were two experiments done, very well-known experiments, very well-respected experiments, one back in 1963 called the Milgram Obedience Experiment at Stanford University, and the other one in 1971 called the Stanford Prison Experiment. And without getting into a lot of detail about what was done in these experiments, they basically boiled down to how human beings put in a certain situation will do things, will make decisions that are poor decisions, bad decisions, decisions that are harmful to other people, depending on the circumstances that they are put in. Or I believe it was the Stanford prison experiment actually had the people in various positions of one person having power over another to see what would happen. And what did happen is what often happens in our society and many cultures around the world. The people with power end up abusing that power and taking advantage of the people who have less power or no power. Two of the categories that I ended up focusing on for these HOA issues, one of them was ignorance. A lot of things seem to be done or coming from a place of ignorance, people just not knowing what's what. And the other one, something I call cognitive impairments. I know that's kind of a mental health term, but it basically means, cognitive impairments means problems with thinking. As they may say in 12-step programs, stinking thinking.
Stinky.
That's what they call it.
I like it.
That's a very good term.
I was going to say it fits perfectly.
That's a very good way to look at it. In terms of the ignorance, what I found is, first of all, a lot of people assume that HOA laws are very fixed, that whatever they appear to mean, whatever the attorney says they mean, whatever the general manager in the HOA says they mean, whatever the board president says they mean, is what they mean. Well, that's really not true.
You're right. It's not true.
Give me an example. At least that's not true in day-to-day practice, day-to-day reality. Many HOAs do surveys. Ours right now is in the process of having a survey done by an outside professional survey group, which I hopefully is good. we've done surveys before internally, so this is the first external one we're having done. But HOAs will do surveys, and then somewhere along the line, someone in the administration or on the board will say something to the effect that, well, you know, we're really not bound by anything that comes out of this survey. And when I first heard that, and I heard that here in our HOA, we are really not bound by anything that comes out of that survey, I thought, what? Well, then what's the sense of doing it? Is this an exercise in
it is in
just poking fun at us members?
It is an exercise in futility. CAI does them on an annual basis. Every time there's a big horror story, they come up with another survey, and they say, look, everybody is happy, happy, happy with this. And
right. Or even if they come up with some, the members have identified this problem and that problem, they give it some initial lip service, is what I have noticed. But then over time, they allow that issue to drift into the background. And it does. And eventually, over a period of 6 to 12 months, it disappears. And nobody is the wiser anymore until somebody like me, who pays attention to all this historical stuff, comes along and says, hey, wait a minute. You know, you guys said blah, 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 blah back then. And, of course, one of the responses that one often gets to that is, well, that was then and this is now. And I'm sure you've heard that one.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that, and that's one of the things I marked up. And the fact is they intentionally do not keep records. When I live in an older HOA, I'm not sure when it was started, the end of the 60s, early 70s, I think, is when they actually broke ground. And in those days, they had a newsletter that was quite full. They had reporters. So homeowners would actually go, and when there was a story, they would go and they'd knock on the door and they'd interview the people and they'd write up an article. So when you got the monthly newsletter, it was full of stuff. And the monthly newsletter was then sent to the local library where it was saved.
Uh-huh.
And when I was when I got on the board, when I started getting involved in all of this, there were two things I did to familiarize myself with this cockamamie thing that I found myself in. One of them was go to court and read up on all the stories, all the lawsuits that we and other HOAs had been involved with, to see what was going on and what the judges were saying. Then,
what a good idea.
Then I went to the library. I discovered that all the old buoys were in the library. So I went to the library and I pulled them out, and I spent a lot of time sitting there reading through that. And I started reading a lot of the minutes were in there. They were quite complete. There were articles in there. There were letters from the homeowners in there. There were discussions. There were also board member reports in there. Then I got on the board, and I did. I wrote a weekly or a monthly column for the board, and I talked about the issues that we discussed on the board. I talked about the pros and the cons. People, you know, people who like them said this, and people who don't like them say this, and this is how I voted.
And the reason, and you did that in your newsletter.
I did that in my newsletter.
Excellent.
I did that in my newsletter.
Then, how much backlash did you get?
Oh, I didn't care. I just put it out there. But the thing was, they didn't want me on the board, so they went around telling all these horrible lies about me. But for years and years and years, after I got off
that's how it works.
For years and years after I got off the board, I had homeowners coming saying, "Oh, you're Sue Bartholomew. I really enjoyed your columns. I miss your columns." Now, of course, the buoy is like three pages long, and there's nothing on there because the industry attorneys will tell them not to put anything in the minutes, not to print the minutes, not to make the minutes available because it could come back and bite them. So a lot
Absolutely.
Of this is done by design, Mike. A lot of it is done by design, and it's design.
I'm convinced. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I've heard them say that. I've argued with them. I've had attorneys. I've argued with attorneys for giving false information, for giving just the whole bit. And they'll come to me and they'll be nice to me, but you know that's I'm not on the board. Right. I haven't been on the board for years, but you know.
Right. Well, the whole thing that you were just describing, the community newsletter, there was such a thing here mm-hmm. at one point. As you were describing all this, I was saying to myself, yes, 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 it's happened here too. It's happened here too. Back in, it was somewhere around 2000, mid-2000s, 06, 07, somebody started a newspaper. Well, not just somebody, several members here started a newspaper. And, of course, the batch of documents that I got from that old board member that I mentioned earlier had several issues of this newspaper in it. I wish it had more,
mm-hmm.
but it did have several issues of it. And looking at it, it was just kind of what you were describing. It was articles written about events that were happening in the HOA, and it was a very, very nice, good little publication.
Yeah.
And what happened to it, I really don't know. That may be another thing for me to explore at some point, but that fell by the wayside.
You know, I wouldn't mind betting that the HOA attorney advised them to not do that, to not put anything in writing.
Probably not. Well, this publication, as far as I know, was done strictly by members. It was not an HOA association authorized publication.
Uh-huh.
Now there's another dynamic that I didn't put in my little article that I sent to you, which I mean, because there's so many different issues, one has to kind of pick and choose. But anyway, it's the issue of bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another phenomena that I've seen here, yeah. and I've heard about it in other HOAs. There
yes.
are these groups of bullies that operate sometimes, I'm convinced, in conjunction and in association with the HOA itself, and sometimes they operate very independently. But at any rate, they have a very pronounced negative stifling effect on the membership.
They don't. You were talking in your paper. Let me see if I can find it here. Oh, you were talking about disenfranchisement, and you were talking
exactly.
about the votes and all of that. And the industry will call it apathy. And the industry went through a period.
Uh-huh.
The industry went through a period where they were blaming the homeowners for being apathetic, because if you don't run for the board, if you don't serve on committees, if you don't do this, you don't. Then that's the demise of the whole HOA concept. You are so bad, you people. But what happens if you run for the board? You're a troublemaker. You're trying to devalue property. I mean, they're going to go around and say and do all kinds of things. But the whole thing is, it goes back to the fact that it's falling apart. It's held together with scotch tape.
The whole thing is, it is. Or I often say it. Yeah, it's held together with spit.
Spit and chewing gum.
With chewing gum, and yeah, because so much of it is I call it this verbal blah 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 that often means nothing. That you hear from board directors, people that I knew before they went on the board, and then after they go on the board, it's like, what happened to so-and-so?
Yeah.
Their attitudes have gotten watered down or changed, and gosh. Anyway, you had mentioned another one of the issues that I brought up just a few minutes ago about, I call it denial of historical influences. In other words, that was then, this is now. It's almost as if they don't want to look, they meaning the association, the board, general manager, it's almost as if they do not want to look back at the history of the HOA and look at the patterns that have been there. And of course, one of the other problems that then often flows from that is solving the same problems with the same old solution.
Yeah. And that's the definition of insanity, isn't it?
It didn't work very well in the first place.
Right.
And of course, they don't work very well now. And then the disenfranchisement of members, I saw that here in a very, very large way. As you were describing, people will go onto the board, they'll get elected, they'll apply to become a member of one of the committees, and after a while, they get burned out. And that could be a whole nother discussion as to how and why they get burned out, but they get burned out, and they lose interest. And then, as you are also saying, how the media, and I guess they're mostly outsiders, use terms like apathy. Well, it's not apathy. I mean, apathy is kind of like that old thing of let's blame the victim.
Well, it's not the media, and it's not outsiders. It's the industry. It's the CAI industry, the attorneys,
well,
the managers.
It is. That's true.
They're the people who say it's apathy. I say nobody wants these damn things. Get rid of them. Nobody wants an HOA. Get rid of them. I'm serious.
I think that's true. One of the other things that I that I found was that many HOAs, the one that I'm in included, so many of the board members and general managers seem to be people that do not have a very good grasp of public relations or customer service. They just don't. I was raised by a father who was a retailer, and he was known in our hometown as one of the retailers who gave very, very good customer service. Everybody went to George because George gave very good customer service. So I grew up with that. And then, of course, getting into the mental health field, the mental health field is all about customer service. It's kind of based on customer service. If you don't give good customer service in the mental health field, you can really hurt some people.
Yeah.
Which does happen, of course. Yeah. That's it.
Well, my dad was an innkeeper, and he always said the customer is always right. And I used to get very frustrated with him because some of those customers were really not right. And I go, Dad, they're horrible. but he said, darling, they're always right. I was like, okay, Dad. I learned that from him. It's difficult to do that, but yeah, that's
well, it is. That is a very difficult concept to put into operation. and to keep it in operation, because like you said, it's very frustrating. There are some people that, well, yeah, they're not really right in a sense, or they're what they're asking of you to do as a retailer or as a maybe a board director is really not logical or really not in the best interest of somebody. But you have an obligation, as I see it. If you're working for an HOA, you have an obligation, or you're working with a community, whether it's through an HOA or, a public community, publicly governed community. You have an obligation to provide some service to those citizens or those members, or to help them realize maybe what they need, because they're not exactly sure what they need. That might be one way to put it. Another thing that I found is when it comes to organizational dynamics, and in other words, understanding human social systems, very poor grasp of that within most HOA general managers and board members.
But the whole concept, Mike, when you think about it, you talked about ignorance. The whole concept was built on the fact that this is a community, and it's nothing like a community, but it's a community where everybody has a say in it. You have as much say in what goes on as your next door neighbor, the guy across the street, or the guy around the corner. And you're all supposed to get together and plan this. But what happens is you get this hierarchical setup, and then the cream rises to the top, if you will, or they consider itself, the self-proclaimed creams. They're at the top, and now they start throwing their weight around and issuing orders and running everything. But the first word you said, I think, describes them, is ignorance. But the whole concept is built on fear and designed to fail.
It is. You have a very good way. Of course, you've been at this, you said 30 years.
Well, that's when I realized there was an HOA there. I'd lived there for a while, and that's when I realized there was an HOA, having been born overseas and having been told that everything in America, everyone was free, freer and bigger and brighter and better. And I'm going, you can't even decide what flowers to put in your yard. What is this nonsense, So I started.
Exactly.
I started fighting back. Nobody ever did anything to me, so I can't honestly say I've ever been victimized by any of this, and I don't understand that. But I just started fighting back. I asked for information, was told I couldn't have it. I wasn't on the board. I said, okay, I can fix that. So I ran for the board.
And then you found out what's really going on, what the inner dynamics were.
Oh, yes. And that's when I learned so much.
And yes, you discovered that it's a sham. It really is. HOAs, I believe, are a sham when it comes to people being able to live in a community where they can share their thoughts and ideas and work together with each other and develop systems that really work for them. HOAs don't work that way.
No, they don't.
They work the way you were just describing. The cream kind of rises to the top. And this goes right into one of the next things. Well, it's not exactly one of the next, but it's close. When I talk about cognitive impairments, and one of them is collective narcissism. It's this idea that there's this group within many HOAs that, as you said, cream that rises to the top. I put cream in quotes because they're mostly people that are, I think, obsessed with control and obsessed with power, and they want to run things, and they get into power positions in the HOAs, and boy, they do run things, and they run things just the way they want. They don't listen to anybody else. They find ways of shutting everybody else up. And it's one of the things I call it is the tail that wags the dog,
right.
You know, an old expression, but it really ends up being that, where these small groups have an outsized effect on issues that are community-wide.
One thing I have noticed, you know, working with board members and watching them and all of that, I think they get very defensive. They find themselves in a position where they really and truly do not know what they're doing. And now they're sitting up front in front of facing the homeowners. And any criticism that comes in, any questions asked, they get super defensive. And so instead of fostering a sense of community, what you're doing is you're creating a mini war right in that room, right there.
And it's a setup to do that, yes.
It absolutely is. And then that creates more work for the attorneys who have created themselves a recession-proof career.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I've had quite a few people here in my HOA ask me, some even a few pleading with me, why don't you run for the board? And my stock response to them is, it's a setup for failure. Why would I want to put myself in that position?
You know what, Mike? It's not a setup for failure. If you run for the board, you can make changes. When I ran, wait a minute. But it's not long lasting.
Many have said that to me also.
We have a 9-member board. When I got on, all the votes were 8-1, and guess who the one was? By the end of the year, there were 9-0 mostly, and I did not change my position at all. I never changed my position. I went in with set ideas and I stuck to them. I did not yell at them. In fact, I have a low voice and I lowered my voice. When everybody was yelling, I lowered my voice. And nobody could hear me.
That's a good formula.
Nobody could hear me, and so they shut up. You know, instead of yelling at them and saying, shut the hell up, I just lowered my voice.
Right. One of the, I'd call it a truth that I've come around to, that you are reminding me of, is that in order to really make a difference and make good changes, if you're on the board, on a committee, whatever it is, number one, stick with your guns, stick with your beliefs, and secondly, be calm, be patient.
Yeah.
Be persistent.
Yes.
That's really what it takes. I had a conversation just a few days ago with one of the current board directors where he said something very, very similar to that as he was describing his approach to making change. And I was very, very reassured by what he said. He said basically the same thing you just said.
You know, when I said you can make changes, the thing is, if you're going to be on the board for the rest of your life, you can keep it that way. Here's where the whole thing falls apart. At some point, you're going to say, that's it, I've had enough.
Right.
I've changed everything that I can. I've changed everything I wanted to change. Things are running, so I'm going to turn it over to someone else now.
And I've seen that happen, huh?
And then it goes, it's a ping pong game. It goes back and forth. It's like sitting there watching the ball. You're sort of bouncing your head back and forth from one side to the other.
Absolutely. That's another dynamic that I have seen over and over. And therein lies, one of my biggest frustrations. Yeah, it's I'm in the process right now of reading a book called Pendulum, which in many ways basically describes exactly what we're talking about now, how things in cultures and societies kind of swing back and forth. This book talks about swinging back and forth between a me position, M-E, to a we, W-E, position.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of, that's what it does. That's exactly what it does. And then after you got off the board, things probably swung back to the me position.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I say it's not long lasting. That's the frustrating part. So you go and you spend several years just really giving it 120% of everything you have.
Mm-hmm.
You make the changes. At first, it's a battle. But over time, as I wrote my monthly columns, people started to understand that. Instead of yelling and screaming, they were reading it. And they're going, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. And so things switched. And they go, oh, you're not against the HOA. No, I'm not. Well, really, I am. I want to get rid of it. But no. But you can make changes.
Right.
Be prepared to be there for the rest of your life. Because someone's going to turn it around the other way. Somebody's going to decide, oh, no, well, you know, I've got to get rid of those people over there. Not everybody was happy, I'll be honest with you. Some people would call me up and say, you're a terrible board member. I said, thank you. I said, my neighbor and is doing this and is doing that and is doing the other. I go, okay, so have you talked to your neighbor? No, it's not my job. It's not, your neighbor's not bothering me. Why would I get involved?
One of the other things I wanted to just quickly comment on, because I'm noticing we're nearly out of time.
You've got time. You've got 11 minutes, 12 minutes.
Well, okay, good. But it's a couple of issues that are kind of dear to my heart because of my, not just my mental health perspective, but as I worked over the years in the mental health field, I came to realize that a lot of the problems that us human beings have, yes, a lot of them are emotionally based. That's true. But a lot of them are thinking based, and they're educationally based. For example, something I call critical thinking skills. There's a whole organization that's devoted to critical thinking skills that I think is a wonderful organization. Can't remember the exact name of it right offhand. But one of the other things I noticed very often in committee meetings that I attended in my HOA and board meetings and so on were that people really didn't seem to stop and think things through very clearly. They would start out with a perspective that was slanted or very obviously very biased that I could see right away was going to lead them to a particular conclusion, and of course very often it did. The other thing is what I call learning deficits or learning differences. And here, I noticed a really curious thing. Here in the United States, learning differences were really not recognized in our educational system until about the mid-1970s. And then what began to happen in schools was that, oh, gee, there are different kinds of learners. There are people that have trouble learning in certain settings or in certain teaching modes. If you talk to them, some people get that very well, others don't. If you have them read it, some people do very well in that and some people don't. Well, at any rate, learning differences not having been really identified until about the mid-1970s. Us baby boomers, by the time the mid-70s rolled around, we were already in our, even the youngest of us, like I was, were in our early 20s. So we were already supposedly adults and out of school, or we were in college or graduate school. And if we had any learning difficulties, reading difficulties, comprehension difficulties, I'll give you a more specific example. I know of one HOA situation where there was a board director who had what technically would be called a speech disfluency difficulty, very stammering speech, kind of slow, labored speech. And if you can imagine a board president who's like that, how difficult that is for members and other board directors
right.
to listen to that person. And it becomes really quite a significant difficulty. At any rate, I guess I'm basically saying that there are these learning differences between individuals, and they were really not identified very clearly. Some of them still aren't so clearly identified or very well known by the general public. And that, I think that gets played out in a lot of the boards and between members and the board and between general managers and the board. People with different kinds of learning styles have trouble communicating with each other. And they may have no idea why they have that difficulty. So, a lot of different factors, I think.
Well, I think, you know, and your paper is great, and you're talking about how HOAs are coming undone. I wish they would come undone a lot faster. About 20 years ago, I decided that it was like an overstuffed turkey. It was going to explode at any minute, but it's still going strong. Mike, we have a couple.
Go ahead.
We only have a couple more minutes left. Time flies. I love the show. Before I let you go, I want to ask you to please come back. But the other thing, you are uniquely qualified. I've always thought that one of the reasons HOAs are still hanging in there is because of fear. People are terrified of...
Uh-huh. Well, they need a place to live. And, you know, where are they going to buy a house? I was in a conversation with somebody recently where we were talking about, have you tried to look for a home online on any one of the real estate websites and tried to find a home that's not in an HOA? Good luck.
I know, they simply don't exist, but the fact is they're built, they're there. We probably cannot extinguish them individually, but you can gut them, and that's been done before, so they are powerless. They have no power at all.
And I think that needs to happen. For the sake of the public, for the sake of homeowners.
But how about something? How do we find out how much fear has to do with keeping this together? People will say, I don't like an HOA, I don't want an HOA, but if I don't have one, my property values are going to plummet. I don't want an HOA, I'm terrified of bullies, but it's going to stop my neighbor from painting his or her door red. I mean, these are all lies. There's nothing, there's no conclusive evidence that any of this is correct or true. But people have been indoctrinated. They're terrified of this. That's your field. That's where the psychologists come in.
Well, a lot of it, I think, goes right back to what you were saying about how did you in particular make the changes you made on the board that you were in. You adopt I guess you would call it maybe an anti-propaganda stance.
Yeah, but people are too afraid to do that. You want to get them over their fear to get them to that point. I wasn't afraid. That was the big difference for me. And I had some great support.
Okay. What I'm saying is that the more information there is out there that's true and correct and accurate, and the more, how can I put it, the more, well, basically, the more that that kind of information is out there, the more people are going to hear it and read it and gradually start to believe it. You know, how do we change people's minds about smoking? How do we change people's minds about, goodness, what are some of the other ones? Well, one of the ones that I get a chuckle out of right now is the cancer folks are saying that the two biggest things with cancer are that directly cause it are alcohol and bacon. And it's like, well, oh my, I can't stop eating bacon.
I need my glass of wine.
And I need my glass of wine with dinner. And it's, oh my goodness. Well, I think in time, that will change.
Mike, we are out of time. Speaking of time, will you come back again, please, and talk to us?
I'd be glad to. And I do want to take you up on your offer to connect with those two other folks from my field.
I will definitely get you in touch. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.